I don't know about you, but I'm always curious if people know when they're watching a milestone film. Did people realize watching Network that one day not only would this movie come to pass, but seem tame in comparison to real life? People used to joke about the Terminator, but now we have a host of scientific theories as to not if, but when artificial intelligence will gain sentience and conquer all of us fleshy humans. I usually don't have that kind of prescience, but there was one movie I watched back in the 90s, realizing with unfolding horror that I was actually looking at a vision of a possible future, where people's lives, jobs, loves, and destinies were all determined before they were even born with a single DNA scan. Back then, it still seemed a fantastical idea, but now, well, we can't say we weren't warned. Ladies and gentlemen, behold the future. Gattaca.
Welcome to The Hold Up. Each month we pick a movie one of us remembers fondly but hasn't seen in years. We watch it and we decide, does it hold up? I'm John Longino.
And I'm John Nelson.
And welcome to our anniversary, John.
Yeah, year four.
Yes,
begins here. Year three is out the door.
Year four begins. Been my ball and chain for 3 years here on this podcast.
Oh, it seems like so much longer, doesn't it?
What's the third anniversary gift? Is it wood or is it like what?
Oh, I forget, but it is like one of those like stupid like wood or beans or, you know, Timexes. I don't remember now.
Could be.
That's so long ago in my relationship at this point.
It should be emails. Of which we don't have any, but
yeah, no one wanted to celebrate with us.
But if you'd like to send us a belated gift, you can email us at holduppodcast@gmail.com. In addition to that, you can go to holduppodcast.com to find all of our social links and everything. You can find all of our anniversary party information, you know, where to send your presents.
Where to rent your tuxes and gowns for the event, the red carpet event we'll be holding. Hold your breath on that one.
Oh, yes. 3 years.
3 years.
We've been doing this.
I know.
Into year four. That's amazing.
I know.
I wouldn't have thought 3 months.
Right? And here we are every month, 3 years later. That was the part that I was like, well, yeah, we'll do this, but it'll be like 2 weeks on, 4 weeks off,
yeah,
one episode,
this
then a year.
This has been steadier than some jobs I've had, honestly.
Most jobs that we've had. We work freelance, bro.
That's true.
This has been the only constant in my life for the last 3 years. Yeah.
And I hope it's been your constant too, dear listener. I hope you've enjoyed the 3 years, because I'm sorry to tell you, but we will be continuing.
There's going to be more. There's going to be at least 3 years more of this bullshit.
Strap in, buddies, because we're going to keep going for as long as we're alive for the next 5 years or however long it is. But
oh, I like how you put a cap on our lifespan. It's like a TV show. Realistically, we might die in 5 years.
Maybe.
I like that.
This conversation is depressing me. We should talk about something else.
Well, let's move before we completely move away from the email and social media section. We have a correction from last month's episode. The Can't Hardly Wait episode.
Yeah.
My wife pointed this out to me. John and I, when we were speaking of Can't Hardly Wait, we referred to the lovely Miss Jenna Elfman as Miss Jenna Fisher. Not the, yes, lady from Dharma and Greg, but the lady from The Office. So sorry about that.
Yes. I'm sorry we confused two prominent sitcom stars with the same first name.
Well,
as the same person, or at least conflated the name one for the other. It's understandable.
We just want to be as nice as we can and make sure everybody feels respected properly.
No, it is.
And then we just tear apart their shit.
We absolutely should get that right. So, Miss Fisher, Miss Elfman, my apologies.
Because we know you're both listening.
Yes.
And well, your agents and
avid fans
and your managers are
listening. They were listening until we botched the name.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Jenna Elfman used to be our biggest fan until we called her Jenna Fisher, and then that was right out the door. So apologies for that. Correction made. Onward and upward.
Excellent. And onward to this month's film, Gattaca.
Yes. We haven't had a hard sci-fi film in a while or ever. I don't know if we've done like this kind of a thing.
I don't think so. We tend not to. We do a lot of comedies, a lot of horror, you know.
A lot of stupid
drama.
Shit.
Yeah. Pretty much entirely stupid shit. But yeah, sci-fi is one that I guess Blair Witch is more horror, to be honest. So, oh, you know what? Last Starfighter, we started with that film.
But that falls under the stupid category. We just didn't know it.
Yep. But no, we haven't really done this sort of psychological science fiction slash horror slash now. Honestly, I don't know, Lost Black Mirror episode that we're about to watch.
Yeah.
Of Gattaca, which I don't even remember the year the film released. Do you know, John?
I don't remember exactly what year
it's
it was
like
released.
90s, it's right?
It's, I'm going to guess it's either 96 or 97.
Again, dear listener, we do not do research or read up on the movies we're
watching. We try and do as much of this from memory as possible.
Hence,
so as
we
to look as stupid as possible.
Misconstrue people's names and get things wrong
well,
when
that
we record
was,
this podcast.
The funny part is that was awful because it was in the half where we can do research, where we can look on the internet and get people's names right.
But we got so used to this habit of just not being educated in any way about what we're talking about. We got so comfortable with it that
I
we
know.
Can just kind of roll with it.
Anyway.
But yes, I want to say it was came out in either late 90s or early 2000s.
Well, I'm fairly positive it was early, late 90s, because it fell into a period where I was, I think I've told the story before, but if I haven't, dear listener, I was an unrepentant movie hopper. Every Saturday, we would go to the AMC theaters in Burbank, my roommate and I, and we would pay for the most recent movie, the movie that had come out that week, and then we would hop from movie to movie with gleeful abandon, and we made sure to buy concessions in between, because then the theater managers just looked the other way. But that's...
Yes. As someone who worked in a movie theater, that is all you needed to do at the time, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just make sure we were greasing the palms correctly, so and not going to the first run movies, you know, going to
of
a...
course.
Sneaking into movies where there was nobody in the audience. And Gattaca was, I believe, the one that we paid for that week, if memory serves. I believe I saw it either opening weekend or the second weekend.
Okay.
Because I have seen this movie once, and I saw it that weekend.
At
it came
occasion.
Out.
At this occasion.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
And I remember it. But the funny thing is this. I've seen, there's other movies on this show that we've done that I've seen multiple times. I can't remember a frame of them when we talk about them. This one I remember quite a bit about.
Really?
So, when was the last time you saw it then?
I would have seen it in the theater as well, and it was also one time. So I don't know if it was the week of release or that close. I don't think it was first run, but I definitely caught it at some point. So, but the thing is, my memories are pretty vague, honestly. I sort of remember, you know, obviously the stars of the movie are probably what sticks out the most to me. I remember, you know, Ethan Hawke. I remember, you know, Uma Thurman. And I think Jude Law is like one of the first movies I ever saw him in.
Right.
Those I remember, and I remember the sort of premise about kind of a dystopian sci-fi film about DNA specifically and sort of a society revolving around people's DNA. But other than that, I mean, specifics. I remember that I think it's Jude Law is giving Ethan... Is it Ethan Hawke or Ethan Hunt? What's wrong with me?
Ethan Hunt is the guy from Mission Impossible.
Ethan Hunt. It's not a real person.
Ethan Hawke. Okay, okay. Yeah, Ethan Hunt is fictional.
Oh,
Ethan Hawke is real.
Oh, Lord. It's an impossible mission to get anything right on the show, apparently. But, yes, yeah, so I want to say that it's Ethan Hawke is a... So it's sort of... I want to say it's a society based on your DNA, and it's almost this kind of neo-Nazi Puritan thing where it's like... The people with the best DNA are the higher in class, and the people with shitty DNA or prone to disease or whatever are like lower in class. And I think Ethan Hawke is posing as a high DNA person. And I know he's borrowing Jude Law's DNA for all his tests.
Right.
So Jude Law's handicapped in a wheelchair, or handicapable, I should say, in a wheelchair. And he's lending his DNA to Ethan Hawke, and Ethan Hawke is sort of posing as a well-doer or a good DNA person at a job. And I think he gets discovered, and he's maybe having a love affair with Uma Thurman or something. That's all I really remember.
I want to say, like, yes, you are correct about things. I have only seen the, you know, I've only seen it the once too. So I remember it very vividly. It's yes, it's about Ethan Hawke, who was born, I believe, with a heart defect, and his parents are real hippies in this movie, and they're like, no, we're not. Like, their doctor says, they discover it in the womb. He's got some sort of heart inconsistency, and he's like, well, we can fix that with a DNA thing. And they're like, no, we don't want to do that. We don't like this newfangled fixing the DNA thing.
They want to splice his DNA or something?
Well,
or?
they fix everything before you come out of the womb, and the parents are like real natural, like, you know, we're not going to let our kid go through that, and so he's born, and they don't realize that they're dooming him to become lower class.
Right.
Like, at the time he's born, he's not lower class, but he becomes it, I think, that, like, society evolves in his lifespan.
Right. Like, in the time between his birth and his professional life, this society has taken up whatever, the new founding fathers of America, whoever it is, you know, instigates the purge.
Right, exactly. Another Ethan Hawke movie where he's...
Oh, that's right. I didn't think about that, but you're totally right.
But yeah, and so he's he wants to, I believe he wants to be an astronaut, but his heart will not allow him to. So he is paying Jude Law. They're living in the same place. And I guess Jude Law is he's been injured. I don't think he was born, obviously, with this problem, because then he wouldn't be high class. But then he gets injured and he is hiding his injury from the world. Like, he's hiding from the world. And Ethan Hawke is using his DNA. He's become this person. And he goes to this job where he's trying to be an astronaut and go into space, and Uma Thurman is there, and he falls in love with her, and he's fooling her. And the great thing about this society is you are constantly having to test yourself. So, like, he's always having to sweep up his, like, fingernail clippings.
Yeah, I remember a lot of anxiety about, you know, them finding a hair of his or some sort of sample.
He's always having to clean up his workspace and leave, like, Jude Law's, like, fingernails and shit behind so they think it's him.
Right.
Because you have to leave. If it's totally clean, then they know you're cleaning it up. So he has to, you know, leave a certain amount behind. And he's just basically proving that he can do the same things that anybody can do. Yeah. It's a very, like, it's a very 70s, like, sci-fi idea. Just
Definitely.
This, like, dystopian, like you say, this sterile society where everything's decided for you. And there's a guy that says, no, I can do it. And it's but the thing I liked about it is I was really into those, like, the Planet of the Apes and Soylent Green at that time. Omega Man, shit like that. And I was, it just had that feel of it. We hadn't had a movie that felt like that since that time, in like decades. And that fit, like, it just slipped really nicely into that, like, you know, sci-fi cinema, you know, of the, you know, dystopian future. I don't even know what you call it, because that 70s thing, it was like a real brief flash and then it was gone.
Yeah, Planet of the Apes is a really great example where that's actually, I really enjoy that kind of sci-fi as well. I always call it sort of allegorical sci-fi.
Yes, that's what I sort of mean.
Kind of upped. The idea being you take modern issues and sort of project them into the future, or sort of have parables to them that are pretty thinly veiled.
Yeah, add vampires and zombies.
Yeah.
And
and you sort of deal with issues in a fantastical way. And in doing so, you as a viewer are a little less on guard or a little less offended, because it's science fiction. It's not real. You know?
Right.
Actually, one of my favorite shows in the world, Battlestar Galactica, the kind of remake series, really followed in this vein as well. And just kind of every show is a parable for something actually going on in real life. And,
right.
Gattaca is very much like that from my memory. And I want to say in the late 90s or at the time, you know, this is kind of like post O.J. Simpson trial. DNA is definitely in the talk of popular culture and just in politics and stuff. As I remember, there's a lot of drama about stem cell research and that kind of stuff. It totally makes sense that kind of anxiety would find its way into a sci-fi dystopian film.
Yeah, and the funny thing is I remember... The thing I remember about the movie is that it was just, like, consistently good. Because even those, like, 70s films that I admire, there was always something goofy about them. Like,
What are you talking about?
Well, Charlton Heston was the star of most of them, so that's, you know, I love Charlton Heston, but
that's the best part of those movies. What are you talking about?
He's a fucking goof, man. I mean, especially in those movies.
That's part of the recipe, dude.
I agree with you, but you put him in those movies, and it's like, well, any, like, kind of seriousness you were going for, it just gets tuned down a notch, because he's just so over the top.
I'll tell you... And I say this in all sincerity, because I liked Gattaca a lot. Like, I thought it was really good. You put Charlton Heston in Gattaca, tell me that's not a better movie. Come on. Like, that is a better movie with Charlton. Like,
well, it would,
he would make that movie.
There would be a lot more, like, gunplay. Because that was the thing with Charlton Heston. There was always, like, weird gunplay and fistfights and shit. And then him saying just the way... Can I quote the Omega Man right now? The Omega Man is based on this story by Matheson called I Am Legend. It was remade with Will Smith. And
it was also made previously, The Last Man on Earth, with Vincent Price.
Vincent Price. Very good movie, by the way.
I've never seen it.
Oh, man. I was like, oh, I couldn't possibly beat the Omega Man. And I saw it and I was like, I don't know. That was real good. Anyway, Charlton Heston's in the Omega Man. They capture him. The zombies capture him. They've got him all tied down. They're going to sacrifice him or whatever. And because it's a 70s, like, you know, allegory, the bad guy, the bad vampire or whatever, lectures him for minutes about, like, it is you who has destroyed the earth. It is you who have brought ruin upon us. It is you who is responsible for all this. And Charlton Heston just looks at him with his big cockeyed smile and says, you're full of crap. And that was Chucky Heston in a nutshell.
So that's what made all those movies great. I mean, I know we're just going on about Charlton Heston here for a moment, but allow me to go down this road a little bit further. What made that shit amazing was Charlton Heston was real great at being this pompous, arrogant piece of trash. And then he was the king of the ironic grief.
Yes.
Of the whole movie just wagging his dick around, being like, man was here before you and he was better than you and all, you know, just like lecturing apes or like Soylent Green's the best or, you know, whatever. And then he would always get to act three and he would always just be like, no, I am undone by my arrogance. God, all along I was wrong.
All right. But
so
anyway,
I don't recall Ethan Hawke as quite, I mean, he's obviously more like a victim of this circumstance. It's not like he's the guy walking around being like, my DNA's better than everybody's. And then at the end being like, oh God, I was wrong.
I was so wrong. Yes. Yeah. Well, this is one of those movies that like showed me that Ethan Hawke could be a good actor. I was really on the other side of that for a long time. Because,
oh, really?
Well, he was in like Reality Bites. He was in Before Sunrise, a movie I was not a fan of the first time I saw it. And I have become a huge fan of since. But to me, he was just like, he was the, like, because everybody's like, oh, he's a slacker. He's the epitome of slacker, blah, blah. He's exactly my age, I think, or very close to my age.
Really?
And it just, everyone just looked at him as like, oh, he's the voice of your generation. I'm like, fuck that dude. He does not speak for me. He does not speak for me. And then he started doing like all these great movies. Like, you know, he did the sequel to Before Sunrise and he did Gattaca and he did Training Day and a bunch of other things. And he just is so...
He's great.
So great. He's just like so good at like doing the thankless roles. And I mean, yes, like Training Day for me is the big one, because like that's the one, it's like you're acting against Denzel Washington, who is chewing the shit out of everything, his biggest fucking role ever, and you've got to be the guy that's like, yeah, okay.
I believe King Kong ain't got shit on him,
right?
From my understanding.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, I became a big fan of Ethan Hawke, I think, based on this movie. And of course, everybody was a fan of Uma Thurman. So, and Jude Law, I don't think I'd ever even heard of, because he's like,
this is like the first thing I ever saw him in. Like, I had like, no idea who he was. I feel like he got cast in this, and then every film that came out after this for the next 7 years, and then like occasional HBO shows. And
right,
that's like it.
I don't remember who directed this. Do you know who directed this?
I have no earthly idea.
Oh, that's so terrible, because it's...
I don't even know who distributed it. Like, I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember anything about it. I just remember being very taken with it and very scared by it, because like I said in the opening, it's just, it was one of those movies where I recognized as we were watching, it's like, oh, this can happen. This totally, right. it could happen, and it probably will to some degree. Like you say, DNA was very much in the talk at that time, and you could just see the writing on the wall. I think now that we've lived with that for a little while, I think there's sort of a new wrinkle to it, and or at least just in my mind, I've begun to think that people will, now that we've moved into like DNA is almighty, and you can, if you have it at a crime scene, then that proves that somebody did it. I feel like the next thing is going to be like, well, we're just going to hack DNA next. We're going to figure out a way
fake. Let's not say that out loud, man. I don't want anyone getting that idea. That Gattaca sounds 2, horrible.
Where people hack the DNA.
Counterfeit DNA sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
But yeah. Ooh.
Well, it's just that thing that we always do as a society. And this is the thing that really I appreciate about the movie, because it makes me think about stuff like this. It's like, we as a society, no matter what time period we're living in, we always think, well, we figured it out. This is the highest rank of science that can be achieved. DNA is all-consuming, all, you know, it is the answer to all. And there is no way it can be faked, and there's no way it can be used against you. And it's like, people have always thought that about everything. You know, like, photographic right. evidence can never be faked. You know, shit like that. And it's
fingerprints,
like,
we're done here or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. So there's always a thing, and it's weird to think to yourself, where like on the one hand people are like, oh yeah, we just caught a criminal here in California, we caught the, you know, the what's his name?
The Golden State Killer.
The Golden State Killer. Yeah. We caught the Golden State Killer based on not his own DNA, but like DNA like five times removed, and we still got the dude. And it's,
I know, I feel like all these serial killers that have family jumping onto genealogy.com or whatever are just all like, oh God, no.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, pack it up. I got to start getting my will and shit ready. But yeah, it's just this weird, like, DNA is the king of science right now. And I just feel like there's going to come a point where even that gets trumped by something. Oh God.
Not that word. No.
Ooh. Okay. Anyway,
talking about that dystopia.
Different dystopia. Different dystopia. All right.
No, anyway. I actually do think you have a fair point there, which is that it's a fantastic technology that is incredibly useful in crime solving and various other things and can be pretty compelling. However, just like any evidence, you know, there's room for worry, right? Like, hypothetical, corrupt cop wants to frame someone, throw a little blood in the corner, check it. Hey, you're here. DNA says, you know, it's like pretty, yes, it's a great tool. And yes, we should put faith in it. But there is a fringe area of like, well, this could be abused or misused. And we haven't really thought of that yet, or it hasn't happened all the time.
Right.
And I think there's an aspect of the movie that is playing on that phobia.
Right.
Of just like, is someone more than the sum of their, literally the sum of their parts? Like,
right.
If the DNA is just saying, this is you. And the movie, I want to say, kind of has this feeling of like, no, we're more than just this.
Yeah.
And you can't define me based off of what this sequence of genes says about me.
Right.
The one thing I'm curious about is I do remember the concept probably the most. Like, I think that's a great concept. And I sort of remember the acting. What's really escaping my memory, I don't know if you have anything, is any kind of the style, the cinematography, the music, the scenes, the plot, like those things kind of don't come to my mind.
Well, the plot, I feel like I remember a lot of. It's just him. He has to basically, because he wants to go into space, there is a point where like, okay, if he makes it to a certain day, then he's going to go into space and then he doesn't have to save any for the trip back. He's in space. What are they going to do? Take him back home? But he's got to make it to that point. And so the whole movie is like T minus, you know, 30 days until the shuttle lifts off and he's terrified of getting caught. And there's just, I think most of the plot revolves around like, oh, he's about to get caught because of this, or he's, sure, you know, around every corner is someone trying to catch him. And he, I think falling in love with Uma Thurman is like a big problem for him because he's trying to not have attachments. And the fact that he's fallen in love with somebody is like, well, she's perfect. And do I tell her that I'm not perfect? And will she turn me in? And is this a problem? I think most of the plot, though, revolves around like just, you know, fugitive type like antics. Like, I just don't want to get caught, but I've got to stay right here in the building where everybody right. can see me. I don't remember. I mean, I remember it being really sterile and very cold.
Kind of muted, maybe.
Like, on purpose. Like, yeah. You know, not like in a bad way, but the style is very much, like, removed. And that's why it sucks that I can't remember the director, because it would be nice to be like, oh, is this what that dude usually did? Or is this what this lady is known for? Or is this, like, a style that they adopted for this movie? It'll be interesting to see, oh, that person that I've didn't remember anything else they've done. Or, oh my sure. God, Martin Scorsese. Okay, well, that was terrible. And I don't remember the writer, and I don't remember anybody else. It really was, it was one of those movies that I'm like, oh, I need to watch that again, and I never did, you know, 20 years ago.
I just find it really interesting that, in all honesty, I have no idea how this movie ends. I have no memory of the finish of the movie, but I do remember really enjoying it, and it's fairly rare that I have a positive memory of a movie that I remember really liking, but I'm so hazy on specifics of.
Right.
Like, it's almost like the concept stuck with me more than... I'm curious if the execution is going to match the quality of the concept, I think is what I'm driving at.
Right.
Like, is it good, or is it just a really good idea and the movie's okay?
Right. Well, and I feel like now that we are, you know, 20 years on, that's one of those that it's like, oh my God, my memory has just juiced it up because it was such a big idea and such a like prescient idea. And now it's like 20 years later, it's like, oh no, they would never
right.
do that now. Or they missed a step because they couldn't have guessed that this other thing would have come first or whatever. So I'm guessing there's going to be some of that. But
Is it a moot point, or is it even more applicable now that
right.
it's an even bigger deal?
I don't know. Every time I think of Gattaca, I get a little nervous. I get a little fluttery in the stomach because, you know, it's not like, oh, I don't want to see that movie because it scares me. But there is a little bit of me that's like, I don't know if I want to watch this. I mean, I really do. But sure. There's a part of me that's like, I don't know if I want to watch this movie because since I have had kids, I didn't understand people who's like, oh, I don't like watching that kind of movie, a depressing movie or a really horrifying or gross kind of movie. I kind of understand it better because I feel like I've seen real life horrors and real life depression and real life.
Yeah.
And so now I don't know, feel the need to subject myself to it as much as I did when I was a younger man. So there right. is a part of me that's like, I don't know, do I need to be bummed out watching this movie? But again, the movie, I believe, ends on a note of hope because it's proving that we can overcome sure. this. So
I mean, hey, if you want to audible to Reality Bites, we can do it right now.
I would rather cut off a thumb than watch Reality Bites again.
That, interesting. I remember
and that's
really
a Ben Stiller
movie, too. I remember liking that, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
That might be, well, that might be one oh. that one day I'll have to see again because I was so mad at that movie for just existing.
Interesting.
And now, but I really liked Ben Stiller, so maybe there's something to it. But that just, oh, that movie annoyed me terribly.
I hardly remember anything. It's interesting. The age difference is a really interesting factor here because your talk of Ethan Hawke as like, what a piece of shit. Oh, actually, this guy's okay. If you have some baggage that I definitely don't have because
right.
I didn't have any like, this guy's a voice of my generation or anything
right.
even close to that. He's always seemed like an older guy to me.
Right.
Kind of like you, honestly.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
But I remember fuck watching that. Reality Bites and I'm a kid and, you know, nothing's applicable to me or my life at that point. It's this kind of world of adults. And so I don't know what it is about Ethan Hawke. I've always enjoyed him in movies and stuff. But what's interesting is all the things I remember about Gattaca, Ethan Hawke isn't like one of them. I remember he is in the movie.
Right.
But I couldn't tell you a line. I couldn't tell you anything about his performance that I recall.
Yeah, me neither. I can't remember any dialogue. I just remember people like staring at each other and whispering like they're in an M. Night Shyamalan movie. There's a lot of that kind
yes.
of performing.
I remember Jude Law kind of standing out.
Well, he's great in this. And again, I don't remember any dialogue, but he is like, he's fallen from grace. He's like, he's that Charlton Heston type guy. Actually, that's maybe the part that Charlton Heston would play. The arrogant guy who's been knocked off his
yes.
pedestal because life was so good for him. And now he sees like how shitty it can be when you're on the other side of it, and he's like drinking. All he cares about is like, I'm just gonna get drunk. I don't give a fuck. Everything is ruined for me. This is all I have to look forward to. And he becomes sort of invested in Ethan Hawke's struggle. Like at the beginning, he could give a fuck. It's just, you know, money
sure,
for him.
Sure.
But yeah.
Yeah, I remember they kind of become friends or something
right.
along those lines.
Well, inevitably, I can't remember exactly how it works out, but inevitably, all these people are going to have to defend Ethan Hawke. Like Jude Law is going to have to defend Ethan Hawke at some point. They're going to find themselves in a position where someone said, hey, which way did he go? And they're going to have to point the opposite way.
Right.
How that's done, I forget exactly. There is one part I remember very specifically, though, which is Ethan Hawke has to wear contact lenses because Jude Law has, I think, blue eyes,
mm-hmm.
and Ethan Hawke does not. And at one point, they are at some sort of like a drunk stop. It's not a drunk stop. It's a imperfect people stop, like
jeez.
Where the cop comes over to your car and says, excuse me, ma'am, you were driving under the influence of being lesser than with because of your DNA. And at one point, I don't remember why he has to do it, but Ethan Hawke has to take his contact lenses out. Like he has to yank them out of his eyes and leave them by the side of the road. And then he's basically blind because he's also, you know, lousy eyesight too, because he didn't
right.
get that fixed either.
Right.
So I just remember that being a big problem because he's having to fake his way through something with Uma Thurman after that with his, you know, his eyes out. But that's the only part I remember specifically, mm-hmm. that and him having to vacuum up his fingernail clippings and skin cells off his keyboard.
Yep.
But that's it.
Okay.
These are all my memories.
Well, in that case, Mr. John Nelson.
Yes.
When we watch Gattaca tonight, is it going to hold up?
I'm going to put down a yes. I'm very excited for it to hold up. It seems like the type of thing that if it holds up, it'll be really good. And even if it doesn't hold up, it's like, eh, good try. This is not like some of our more recent attempts where it's like, well, if it doesn't hold up, you're in for a world of hurt.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I don't think we're going to have like a stinker or anything. I feel like it's going to be good. I will say I do have some minor worries. I mean, not that I think it's going to be terrible, but my instinct is that the concept was really impressive and especially since that's all I remember, but that the actual movie is just fine.
Just
like,
okay.
Like, not great, not bad, like, just kind of there and fine. That's a lot of my memory of it. So my worry is that with age, I'll tell you what, the side question of am I going to fall asleep, I have a lot of concern there.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, this, I'm pretty sure you will, because again, it's a
sleepy,
quiet
movie.
Yeah, it's again, M. Night Shyamalan, I invoke for, you know, a good reason, which is people whispered a lot in the late 90s in movies.
But my concerns being spoken, I don't think they're enough to warrant me to declare that I don't think it will hold up. I think it will hold up. I am hopeful that it will.
Excellent.
And so we shall see.
Even if it doesn't hold up, even if there's stuff about the movie that it's like, well, there were three good parts, the beginning, you know, this one part in the middle, and then the ending, that would be in keeping with all those Chucky Heston sci-fi ones, because there's a lot of garbage in the middle of some of those movies. Not Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yes.
Have you seen Soylent Green lately?
No. You just reneged the only thing I was offended by, because Planet of the Apes is one of my favorite movies ever, so I was about to go off on you.
No. Planet of the Apes,
but
I love.
Since you just excluded that from your criticism, we are fine.
Yeah, the yes. Omega Man.
Soylent Green's kind of shitty. Like, I'm not going to lie. It's a great ending, yeah. But like, most of it's bad.
And I love the Omega Man, but it is a product of its time. So,
to say the least.
Maybe this will fit right in with that. And if it does, then that's great, too. We need more of those.
All right. Well, it's time to get under the microscope and go check this thing out, see if it's an authentic or forgery of a good movie.
Man, you really built that up nicely. Good metaphors.
Hey, you're welcome. What can I say? It's in my genes. But let us go and watch Gattaca, and we'll be right back.
In the not-too-distant future, our DNA will determine everything about us. A minute drop of blood, saliva, or a single hair determines where you can work, who you should marry, what you're capable of achieving. In a society where success is determined by science, divided by the standards of perfection, one man's only chance...
How do you expect to pull this off?
I don't know exactly.
...is to hide his own identity.
This is the last day that you're going to be you and I'm going to be me.
...by borrowing someone else's.
Congratulations.
What about the interview?
That was it.
Do you think you'd be doing what you're doing if it wasn't for who you are, what you are?
I have a feeling he might be there under false pretenses, playing somebody else's hand.
They've got my picture plastered up all over the place. They'll recognize me.
They won't recognize.
They'll recognize me.
I don't recognize you. They won't believe that one of their elite could have suckered them all this time.
They are going to find me.
But in a place where any cell from any part of your body can betray you, how do you hide? When we all shed 500 million cells a day. Welcome to Gattaca.
And we are back from our trip to the space and stars. From Gattaca, we have returned. We've landed. John, how you doing?
I'm great, John. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Well rested, are we?
Actually, it wasn't so bad. Like, I fell asleep at times during the movie. John's nodded off and had some sleep, but like, I don't feel like I actually missed a ton. Like, I was kind of in and out.
I don't blame you. That movie is quiet, man.
Well, let me regale you with a little ditty called the soundtrack is the same like five chords fucking over and over and over, just everything's
it's like a Philip Glass score.
It doesn't matter if it's the happiest moment in the movie or the saddest or people are fucking or just committing suicide or whatever whatever's happening. It's just that fucking song the entire time. So, yes, I was lulled into a blissful, restful sleep at times.
It's because, a pretty soundtrack. It's like, yeah, it's like Enya or something.
Yeah, it's like you're getting a massage and, you know, the spa music's like playing in the background. So that, you know, that, so that's not entirely my fault. I just want to say, I know I fall asleep a lot. This, please defend me a little bit. Like, this one is a kind of a sleeper type like movie. Like, it's
sleeper hit, you mean? So, well, okay. So should we get into it? What do you want?
Sure.
What do you think?
Well, okay. All right. So since I have confessed to falling asleep at times, John, I need to ask you, there's certain things that, like, maybe I missed.
Okay.
But I just want to double check. All right. So thing number one, there's like a grisly murder in the movie. Like, someone's brutally beaten to death with a keyboard.
Right.
That's unsolved, right? Like, is it ever explained?
Oh, man, you were gone then, weren't you?
Okay.
Yes, it is solved.
Well, shit. All right. Well, what happened? Who killed the guy?
Gore Vidal. Who I had forgotten was in this movie, Gore Vidal, who...
Oh, the main guy, like the other
the
director?
The head of the department, yeah. Okay.
Why did he kill him?
Because the dude was going to shut it down, and Gore Vidal is too old, and this is the last time he's going to see it, so he wanted to make sure it happened.
Shit.
So I guess you missed...
How long did they explain that for?
Some minutes.
Yeah, I was... All right, I was gone. Okay.
Oh, that's too bad. Okay, so question number two. Well,
that made no sense to me. I was like, that seems like a pretty big deal that they didn't wrap up this murder.
Oh, man, that's too bad really for you. Good. Yeah, they did okay. Solve that. They solved that. Alan Arkin went to the corpses... he went to see the corpse in the morgue, and he... I don't know why they didn't think of this before, but he pulled saliva out of the dead man's eye,
okay.
And they matched it back to Gore Vidal.
Oh, got it. So they did like basic police detective.
Yeah, they did. So they're so out of practice with doing basic detective work that they
look for DNA everywhere but the body of the guy.
Which, by the way, I kind of love that because that is kind of like it shows just how like so kind of lazy this society has become in a way. I mean, for a society that like prides itself on physical perfection, there's a lot of shit they miss because they're just so like. Adjusted to a certain mindset that like I completely believe that like oh yeah we didn't even bother to scan the corpse because yes. We didn't get what we wanted the first time or whatever.
I can see that, which by the way that's something that we didn't really remember when we were discussing the movie. For those of you listening, there's sort of this like murder plot that's kind of the MacGuffin of how and why they're investigating the, you know, the area.
The movie, I mean, when it happened it sort of clicked into place. I'm like, oh, this is a noir, a very,
kinda.
You know, like a sci-fi noir. I was like, oh shit,
Alan Arkin, who, by the way, Alan Arkin's in the movie, like, yeah. is literally dressed like Sam Spade or something, straight up detective.
Well, man. That I love, too. All the cops in this, except for the head, who is, you know, genetically superior, all the cops are old men dressed like, you know, Humphrey Bogart with, like, the fedoras and the trench coats, and
they're called... They're like the Adjustment Bureau, basically. Yeah. Like,
but they're called Hoovers, as in J. Edgar, but the funny thing is they use vacuums for their jobs, so I thought that was kind of clever. There's a lot of... I mean, I was looking at, like, trivia, and apparently, like, the dude who wrote this and directed it, Andrew Niccol, who wrote The Truman Show and has directed that Simone Al Pacino movie.
He's got the AI.
Yeah,
kind of movie.
He's written and directed a number of movies, but this was his, as our friends over at the Freshman 15 like to call it, his freshman film. This was his directorial fucking debut, which is like, wow, that's impressive.
Well, sorry, Freshman 15 didn't mean to, you know, eat your lunch on this one.
We sure did, though. You all can suck it.
Oh, that's interesting. That's actually interesting. Like, as a freshman movie or someone's first movie, it's actually pretty all right for first effort.
Yeah, I like how you could, for a first effort. Wow. We watched two different movies, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, I watched a movie and you watched half of them.
Sure. I mean, yes, maybe I'm sure if I'm asking major plot points that I thought were unwrapped, but in fact, I just slept through, maybe that one's on me. I don't know. But yeah, it, you know, it's really telling to me that kind of my whole thought about this was like, oh man, I love the premise. I, you know, the actors are great, but I don't really remember the finer points of the movie. And now that I've seen it, I'm like, oh, okay, I see why none of that stuck with me at all. Because the way interesting part of the movie is the beginning. Like him and him kind of monologuing and walking you through, like, here's the world, here's all the shit I have to deal with.
Right.
Here's all of the DNA and all, like that part I thought still worked really well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think we elaborated on this. He has to, in order to get through just his regular day, he has to like start his day by scraping himself raw so he doesn't leave any yes. skin cells and hair behind. So he has to like brush and groom himself really, really finely. And then he has to like put like a magician fill his sleeves and every, you know, part of himself with like the fake blood and the right. fake urine, and he's got to have like a apparently he's got like an artificial penis because the doctor who takes his urine is like, man, that's a very impressive member you've got.
Yeah, he's literally watching every second of this guy pissing. So I don't know if he was doing some sleight of hand where he's weaving the tube like under his shaft to really sell it or something. Like, obviously, yeah, I don't know. Go into detail, but it was kind of interesting.
But yeah, and he's got like, you know, finger pads with blood, you know, stuck to the tips of his yeah. fingers. And
look like a pain in the ass, man. Like, just every yeah, day.
It seems like every day there's like a 2-hour setup, and it's like, Jesus Christ, just to go and do your job, which I'm sure is already hard enough. But again, that's part of the movie. It's like he's the guy that has to do twice as well just to be equal to everybody else, right. Which is, you know, there's a metaphor in there somewhere.
Yes.
An allegory, if you will.
The other kind of main plot aspect that I had completely lost all memory of this time around was the fact that one of the investigating detectives of this murder case turns out, and so spoiler alert for those that want to go catch Gattaca before we continue to talk about it, ends up being his brother. There was this backstory of his brother who was genetically engineered versus him who's God-born, you know, someone born of just chance.
And a love child.
Yeah, they had this swimming competition, you know, where they sort of played chicken and saw who would turn back or get afraid first, and he pretty much almost always lost, except for these, like, couple of times. But they have this thing, this detective that you've seen the whole movie ends up being his brother, and it's just like, Vincent, you don't recognize your own brother. And then they just run off in the middle of a murder investigation and swim. And that was something that, I don't know, those kind of just contrived movie convenience things. Like, come on. Like, his own genetic brother happens to have become a detective and happens to be investigating the murder to which he is a suspect. And, like, we have a billion scenes where he doesn't say shit, and then, like, right at the 0 hour, he's like, well, you know I'm your brother, right?
Again, they were dropping a lot of hints. I don't know if you were awake for those parts.
No, I know, and I get it. As we were watching it, I sort of picked up on, like, oh, yeah, I remember. Like, it wasn't like I was shocked when it came.
Ethan Hawke keeps avoiding him deliberately, and you just think, oh, it's because he's a cop or whatever. Sure. But it's like, well, obviously the dude would recognize him.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think it was like some, you know, Usual Suspects twist-a-roo shocker thing. but that's just so, like, lazy and convenient, and just, that's such a movie plot. Like,
well, yeah,
on.
I mean, yes, this is obviously a movie. I mean, I'm not being derogatory. I mean, there are a lot of things that point to this being a movie. It's like there's a lot of stylistic choices that are like, well, yes, you're watching a movie, this isn't real life. Like, you know, yeah. They have a staircase in their apartment, and the staircase, well, number one, Jude Law can't get up the staircase, and that actually becomes a cool plot point, because at one point sure. he has to quickly get up the staircase and pretend like he didn't climb the whole way up.
Honestly, might be the best part of the whole movie. Like, him just climbing up those stairs, it was pretty impressive.
But that was also in a DNA looking sequence. I don't know if you like, the staircase looks like a DNA helix.
Sure.
Just shit like that is all over, you know. So again, you're never forgetting that you're watching a movie, because there's all these like kind of you know, metaphors and symbols and things like that. So it really, like you say, it's like so convenient that all these, like, it's like Vincent Freeman is his name, Freeman, and you know all that stuff. So I don't know. It didn't bother me as much, though, because,
well, honestly, I think it did bother me a little bit. Like, I think
I see that.
I think that the
conceit is really interesting, and the, you know, the cast is really interesting, but there is something in the execution that's like, I don't, you know, like when you're in film school and you're just watching one of those movies and you're like, come on, man, like really? like it's just really heavy-handed. Like the movie's really heavy-handed.
Yeah, well,
the
that I can.
Score is like it really heavy-handed. Like here's how you need to feel the whole time. Even the VO, like the monologue stuff, I actually started thinking, like, do we even need this? Like, yeah, I don't think it's even necessary for the movie. I can pretty much understand most everything without it. And everyone's really stilted, and it's just such a... I'm telling you, when he was just like, you don't recognize your own brother. It's like, come on. It was so lame. Like, it's lame. That part's lame. Like, it's just, come on. Like... nothing feels real. Like, no one's acting like they actually would. About the most human character is the guy watching him pissing, honestly.
Played by Xander Berkeley, by
the
way.
Yeah, exactly. Of 24 fame, and what, he gets murdered in Terminator 2, which I always love. But he actually, that's another part of the movie. Like, right at the end, he's like, oh shit, I'm about to get caught. They have a surprise screening. The whole movie's been like, oh no, I'm ducking these screenings left and right. I got my fake piss and all shit. And then just kind of conveniently out of fucking nowhere, the doctor, this guy's like, yeah, you know, my son's a big fan. By the way, did I mention that my son has shortcomings? And he's like, the test fails, and Ethan Hawke's like, oh god, I'm about to get caught, and he's just like, da-ding, passes him, and he's like, good luck, Vincent. It's like, oh, what, like, invalidating, like, any tense moment in the movie of this guy. Like, if this guy was just in cahoots from the get-go or knew what was up, like, I don't know.
If you knew he was in cahoots, then why bother hiding it?
Because there's just a lot of like movie bullshit of like, gotcha, like a lot, you know, all those dumb movie surprises that are like, oh, you thought it was this way, but it was that way. Then I'll give everyone like one of the or two of those, but this movie just has a lot of that. Of like, hey, actually, he's your brother. Hey, actually, the guy was your ally all the time. Hey, you know, I know. I sound like a complainer. It's just the movie. It's not, the concept is great, and the execution is just a little too bullshit for me. Like, it's too,
wow.
It's too movie. Like, it doesn't feel real at all, like, even close. And something like we were talking about Planet of the Apes or something, if Charlton Heston was just screaming through every scene, then I'd maybe get on board of, like, but I don't know, it just doesn't feel realistic, like, at all. Like, I have no real sympathy for anyone in the movie.
Well, realism is something I would agree with the realism, because it does feel detached from the real world. I'll say that.
Oh, yeah, and then Jude Law just, like, commits suicide because earlier he said he walked out into a car and, you know, oh, man, maybe I'll try again, and he's holding his silver medal as it closes up on the silver metal burning in the incinerator. It's just like, come on.
Wow.
So heavy-handed. Like, it's so heavy-handed.
All right. Well, I was watching a different movie than Longino.
Okay.
I liked most of that stuff.
All right.
I'll stop
complaining. You please explain. Like, why am I wrong? Why is it good?
I'm not going to say you're wrong. I'm not telling you you're wrong. I'm just saying, for whatever reason, it worked for me. The Xander Berkeley thing, honestly, I love that part. That's one of my favorite parts of the movie. And especially this time
like
around.
At the end? Or
yeah. Well, because I remember...
Well,
I
mean, you know, honestly, I'm griping a little bit. It's hardly the worst. I think that in of itself I wouldn't care about at all.
Right.
But mixed with the other, like, serendipitous moments of, like, oh, your brother and all the... You know, everything's a million... They're like, everything in the movie is, like, defies logic, where it's sort of, oh, man, 99% he's dying of a heart attack, except we're in the universe where he rolled, like, a heart eight and isn't dead. They already established that it's incredibly unlikely for him to be alive.
Right.
So, of course, he's fine. And he keeps going. They're like, what if we're in that 1 in 100? Everything in the movie is a 1 in 100, by the way. Like, that's, I think, what's bothering me. You get, like, one of those. You don't get, like, 15 of them.
Well, what are the others, then? What are the other 13?
Okay. All right. Here you go.
Since you're on that.
No, it's just one. Like, did he never gets caught ever with except this one moment with the DNA thing? Even though they're like so scrupulous with everything they're checking. Really, the brother thing is top of the list of just like, come on, you got to be kidding me. The guy helping him out, Uma Thurman being totally fine with him, even though she's like obsessed with checking the DNA and all this stuff. Like him matching Jude Law and it being this kind of. Not perfect match, but close enough. The fact that no one, 5 billion people look at this photo of Ethan Hawke and don't realize that it's him. Come on. Like, it's a fucking picture of him. Like, and I know they do like, no one looks at photos anymore. They just check your, like, come on. Are they that idiotic? I thought these were like the best and brightest people. Like, it's just.
Well, now, I mean, no, hold on a second. That, to me, if you're going to use that, that goes back to the whole. This society has become incredibly lazy in a lot of ways.
Sure.
I mean, I can give you that. You know, I can give you the, you know, maybe the brother thing is a bridge too far. But again, back to the Xander Berkeley thing, the thing that touched me the most about it, and I didn't remember exactly what had happened, but I, you know, in the beginning, Xander Berkeley is his doctor and he's, you know, watching him urinate with his incredibly large member and admiring it from afar. But he does mention his son in the beginning. He mentions him a couple times. He's like, oh, I never tell you about my son. I need to tell you about him. But he never quite gets to it until the end where he then mentions, oh, my son, he's a big fan of yours because he's actually got some problems. Again, not something I necessarily thought of before we walked into the room, but as the parent of a special needs child, that actually resonated quite a bit with me as someone who is constantly worried about the future and sure. How people will regard my kid. That actually, I mean, once I realized I remembered that moment was coming in the beginning when he said, my son is, you know, let me tell you about my son. I was like, oh shit, right. Xander Berkeley's in on it and his son's got things wrong. Oh yeah, okay. I remembered the plot element. And then when it got to the moment where Xander Berkeley's like, yeah, my son, he's a big fan of yours and they say he can't do stuff, but who knows? And it's just, that was just like, it touched me unexpectedly. I knew it was coming, and I still was like, oh, that actually hit me right in the soft and squishies, because that is a real concern of mine and a thing that I have to go through. So that, actually, I say, is kind of cool. And I like the way that Xander Berkeley I like as an actor anyway, so the fact that he was saying it made it even better for me.
Well, sure. I mean,
so there's that.
To his credit, he was one of the more like human, you know, had a pulse type characters in the movie. I'd say him and Jude Law were the two people that, like, had any emotion whatsoever.
Yes. And well, then, Ethan Hawke had fear.
Ethan Hawke had fear, and maybe Ethan Hawke's, like, parents, you know, right. Like, in the brief flashbacks.
Elias Koteas and who was his wife?
Yes. I didn't. Casey Jones and some woman that I don't. Yeah, I forget his wife. I didn't recognize her.
But yeah.
But I'll concede to that. Like, I understand, obviously, you know, having something that's relatable in that vein will certainly help those
would
kind of things
juice
out.
It. Yeah.
You know,
well,
for sure.
I didn't even think about that when I picked this movie. I was like, oh, right. I have a special interest in this sort of thing and in how our children are sort of prejudged before they hit a certain age.
I actually think one of the most horrifying things and probably one of the most effective things in the movie is the baby's born, the mommy's like holding the child, and it's as you and I know, for anyone, like, that's a pretty joyous moment, like the birth of your child. Pretty hard to knock that one into a bad zone. But they succeeded because they're literally like right over there going like probability of this, whatever. And they go to like probability of heart failure. 99% will live to the age of 30.
Right.
And they're standing right there going like 30 years. Jesus. And I watching was like, oh, my God, especially now having a child. And that's pretty relatable. The idea of knowing or feeling fated of like, this kid will only live to 30, and we know that now. Whereas like in most times now, we wouldn't necessarily have that information right out the gate or to that level of certainty. I mean, obviously you can do genetic screening and see that kind of stuff, but like nothing on this level of like the down to the year you're going to die. So that was kind of haunting. Like I think this, and I totally get the like, they say that I'm going to die at this age and I'm going to, and look how he shows them at the end. He's gone past it. And now he's going literally to the heavens, like to the stars. And the guy who was fated to be
Mr. Perfect is lighting himself on fire
and putting himself in a,
and has his own burdens of, it's equally as fucked up to point to someone and be like, you're going to be perfect,
right?
And you're going to be exceptional.
Yes.
And then when they don't quite reach that, if you get the silver in the Olympics instead of the gold, you feel like some failure.
Right. Which I also liked.
Yeah. I think that is the area where the movie's strong. Like, the concepts are strong. Ultimately, I know I sound like I'm being pretty critical, but I will give the movie credit that the concept is great and that those overarching ideas are great.
Right.
I think it's really telling that I remembered the ideas of the movie.
Sure.
I didn't remember the actual movie.
Right.
And now, faced with the actual movie, I'm having all these reactions to the sort of like choices and the acting style.
Right.
Very heavy-handed nature of it, and sort of, I don't know. I with that material, I would make different choices, and maybe right. That's why I'm getting frustrated.
Yeah, I like the sterile nature of it. I mean, I do think it's risky to be like, well, society is so sterile and cold, and all these choices are made for you. It's interesting that his kind of perspective is, this is what it'll do to society. It will remove some of the warmth, you know, this, and which, sure, you know, makes a lot of sense. It's like, you know, because one of the things I do like is that Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman, when they're at work, they act a certain way. And then when they're sort of by themselves, they're a little more giggly and a little more like, you know, as you would be if you were like in a secret relationship. And Jude Law, of course, is like completely alive in a way that, you know, nobody else in the movie is. But it really is like they do put on a persona when they go to work. So that does speak to the like expectations of this society, which is like, no, you're going to fit in. And that means you shut up.
Right. Since you mentioned Uma Thurman, I unfortunately have to criticize the movie for her, not necessarily her performance or anything, and this is true of, I don't know, most movies, but she's really pretty terribly not well defined, you know. Her character's like literally just there to be a love interest, Ethan Hawke.
Right.
I couldn't even tell you her name, to be honest. Like, I don't remember anything about her character, who she is, or his, like, she's just pretty thin when it comes to her character. Like, it's right. Just she's, and part of that lends to that sterile environment you're talking about.
Sure.
But I have to give that criticism that, like, she could be a little more well-rounded.
She could be. Well, and again, she is used as just the she is the inferior superior, I guess, because she's like, oh, she's genetically engineered, but there was still something a little off about her. Like, she had a heart condition as well, but for whatever reason, it just didn't get cured by, you know, science and manipulation or whatever at the beginning. So she's supposed to be the one that's like, well, you know, she's allowed to work and, you know, mess with the hoity-toity, but she's not allowed to go up into space, like, because she's not going to survive or whatever.
We should also briefly mention that this is the film where Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman fell madly in love with each other.
They hooked up and couple. Had kids and then split and then life went on, I guess.
Probably because every moment of filming was so sterile and dispassionate
right.
that they felt compelled to, I don't know, to live life,
to
like,
liven it up,
fun,
to run to a broom closet and celebrate having a pulse.
Unfortunately, Ernest Borgnine is the one that got the most action. If you knew that.
That was great that he was in there, because that was almost like a
that's gonna be like one of the last movies he did, like, right? He's so old then.
Yeah, well, it was sort of like a nod to those like 70s like dystopian things. Totally. It's like, hey, let's throw in Ernest Borgnine. He was in 12 of those. So I liked him. Alan Arkin, Tony Shalhoub, who else? There was a ton of people. Oh, Dean Norris as a cop,
right?
You know, once again,
just, oh yeah, randomly.
Yeah, just a random cop, you know, and then he went on to play a different cop in Breaking Bad.
Right.
Yeah, there was just, it was one of those where like everybody just showed up, was like, oh, that's somebody famous or somebody who will be famous, we'll see them again.
Definitely.
So that was cool to see.
And I do think I should clarify, like, I know I'm being kind of shitty and mean on it, but a lot of that was because my memory of it was really good, and so like, it's not a bad movie, it's not like it's some piece of trash, it's just, I don't know, like, it. And I wouldn't even say it's from a time. It's just sort of has a rhythm to it that is very intentional.
Right.
That is definitely pretty strong. in terms of a choice, but I don't know. It lends itself to nap time, apparently. I don't know. So certainly I'm coming off a little more negative than you, but I'm actually curious, as opposed to your memory of the movie versus the movie you saw.
Right.
Were there any discrepancies, good or bad, or, you know, what changed for you?
Well, the relatability factor was actually higher this time around, like I said, because now that I'm a parent, all that stuff actually hit a little more home, and it predicted a lot of things. Like, now we have 20 years later to look at. Like, they have even Apple Watches, for crying out loud, like talking into their watches. That's over true. The phone and shit. No. There was a lot of things that it sort of casually predicted.
Didn't get the keyboards right, but you can't get everything.
Well, the keyboards haven't changed. I know. Like, you could have still had the 95.
That was funny. It's like the distant future, the not too distant future, whatever, but then the keyboards are just like, they're clacking on, you know, mid-90s. Like,
yeah, they're still kind of clickety. Well, I would say keyboards haven't actually changed that much anyway. They're just flatter.
It's a big difference.
It's so huge. Such a huge difference. Yeah, I don't know. That I had a, you know, I see your flaws with the film. I see your problems, and I acknowledge that those are there, but they just didn't bother me. And the stuff that I liked, I still liked, and the stuff that I had forgotten about, I was like, oh, that's clever. So I admired it more a second time around for that, and I admired its prescience. So I don't know that I'm going to go out on a limb and say, this is the most perfectest sci-fi dystopian predicting movie ever. But I don't know. I feel like it gets points for even just kind of doing the network thing where it's like, well, network obviously didn't come true that way, but sure, it more or less came true.
Right.
So, you know, points for that as well. Okay. So there.
Excellent.
How about that?
Well, before we close the book on Gattaca, I think we need to officially render our verdicts. John, did it hold up?
I'll say yes. I'll say that it held up. And again, not only because I liked it again a second time, because it was able to touch my cold heart in a way that it didn't the first time. I'm going back to that moment with Xander Berkeley. That alone made me go, oh, and it twisted my heart just that little bit. So, which I don't think the movie did. I think the first time I was like, oh, that's cool. And now this time it's like, oh, God, yes, please. That would be me. I'd be the parent who's like, yes, I'll help Ethan Hawke escape this fucking nightmare society so that my child can have the hope of one day escaping as well. So yeah, holds up for me.
Okay.
And you say?
And I am forced to render the verdict that it did not hold up, though I don't think it's terrible. And I think a split vote is fair.
Like, yeah, I can live with a split vote.
It's not even like I'm like, oh, where are you coming from? Oh my God, you know. I think it's got some mixed bag qualities that, you know, could or could not work for you viewing it. So
If you
want to go back and check out Gattaca, I feel welcome. It's not like I'm like avoided.
I'm just glad we didn't gush for half an hour over how great it was on both of us, because that would be boring. So now I can rest assured that entertainment was made here today with opposing viewpoints.
I don't know what you're talking about. I was cool, calm, and collected, and completely reasonable throughout the entire discussion.
I didn't say you were unreasonable. People haven't seen us unreasonable yet. We need to get there eventually.
That's true. Well, maybe we will next time. Who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, what are we watching next time, Longino?
Nelson, for the month of September.
For back to school?
Yes, for our fourth year of recording, we are going to watch Bowling for Columbine.
Why, that's a documentary, Longino. I don't think we've done one of those on the show before.
We have not.
Also, it's incendiary.
Yes. Highly political and perhaps a bit divisive. So I thought it would be interesting. That's going to be my pick. Seems like the time. So, if you would like to send us a comment on Gattaca, tell me to shut up and hit the road.
Yeah,
and,
tell, you know, John Longino to suck
for
it.
Besmirching such a high quality
the amazing
film.
Gattaca.
You can send us an email at holduppodcast@gmail.com. You can also visit us at holduppodcast.com. There you'll find links to our Facebook page, our Twitter page, or you can find us on Instagram at holduppodcast. Thank you so much for listening to us for the last 3 years. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, everybody. We've loved having you aboard.
We look forward to many more to come. And until next time,
nobody move, nobody gets hurt.